Welcome to Bloomberg Law for this Tuesday, January 19th. I'm June Grosso. The streaming music service Spotify has been hit with two copyright infringement lawsuits by songwriters within 2 weeks. The class action lawsuits allege that Spotify has not paid songwriters and publishers the royalties they're owed. Spotify streams music to about 75 million users, millions of songs, including songs by Cracker and Camper Van Beethoven, like King of Bakersfield.
I got a double wide in my own Merlot vineyard. Got plenty of space to park my dually trucks.
David Lowry, the frontman of the band and an advocate for artists' rights, is suing Spotify for unlicensed streaming of his songs and those of other musicians. He filed his lawsuit at the end of last year. Less than 2 weeks later, songwriter Melissa Ferrick sued Spotify for the same reason. Both songwriters are seeking to represent a class. They allege the damages involved are somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 to $200 million. My guests are Professor Robert Brownice, the co-director of the Intellectual Property Program at George Washington University Law School, and musicologist Dr. Michael Harrington, faculty chair of the Music Business Department at SAE Institute in Nashville. Robert, would you start by explaining how a license for one piece of music involves two copyrights?
Well, it involves two copyrights because songs have both composers and performers associated with them. So a sound recording is a sound recording of a musical composition which has one or more composers, but it's also being performed by people who may or may not be the composer of the song.
Michael, record labels represent the artists who record the songs. Publishing companies represent the songwriters, usually. So explain how Spotify is paying the record labels that represent the artists, but is not paying, allegedly, the publishing companies.
Well, I think they have been paying both. If Spotify is not paying a publisher, I mean, Spotify has been around since 2008, and I think it seems they've been acting in good faith and done so many things correctly. But if they were paying the record label, that's usually done through a direct negotiation, some deal with the label. But with the publisher, you know, again, it can be difficult to find who is the publisher. Things, you know, finding the specifics about some of those issues can be really difficult, as well as for record labels, as labels come and go, or they could be bought by another label. And how you identify tracks, for example, gets difficult because you have to know who's performing on the track to get paid and so forth, and there's no one way of doing it. So I think they're usually doing both. And if they're not, I think it's because they haven't been able to locate the correct parties to pay.
Well, the company spokesman Jonathan Prince said in a statement they're committed to paying songwriters and publishers every penny. Unfortunately, especially in the United States, the data necessary to confirm the appropriate rights holders is often missing, wrong, or incomplete, and they have put aside money. But, Robert, are they paying all the songwriters? Why bring this lawsuit? Why have two people bring lawsuits seeking class actions if they're being paid?
So it gets even more complicated with on-demand streaming, which is what Spotify is, because the under current settlements, they actually have to pay for the on-demand streaming, pay to composers or songwriters for the on-demand streaming in two different ways. They pay for the public performance of the song through associations like ASCAP or BMI, Performing Rights Organizations. Those organizations have been in the business of distributing money to many songwriters for a long time. So they have pretty good databases of who they need to pay when they are paid by a service like Spotify. But because Spotify is an on-demand service, Under current arrangements, they also have to pay something called mechanical royalties. Mechanical royalties are something that were created for distribution of songs on a physical medium like a CD or earlier vinyl records. But it was agreed that because on-demand services will substitute for physical recordings, that on-demand services would pay both the performing rights organizations like ASCAP and BMI, and these mechanical royalties. And it's really the mechanical royalties that are creating the problem, because there's no organization, except perhaps the record companies right now, which would have the database necessary to identify all of the songwriters that need to be paid. And that's put the Spotify in the difficulty that they're in.
And we're going to be talking more about the class action aspect of these lawsuits, because there are two lawsuits, both songwriters filing their suits as class actions. What will go into determining whether the suits will go forward as class actions and who will represent the class? Can Spotify prevent a class action from being certified by a court? That would be a big win for the streaming service, because the expense of filing lawsuits would stop individual songwriters from seeking damages. I'm June Grosso, and you're listening to Bloomberg Law on Bloomberg Radio. We're talking about two lawsuits against the Spotify, which is a streaming music service very well known, and both songwriters are seeking to represent a class. They allege the damages involved are somewhere in the neighborhood of $150 to $200 million. They allege that they were not paid royalties by Spotify. My guests are Professor Robert Brownice, the co-director of the Intellectual Property Program at George Washington University Law School, and musicologist Dr. Michael Harrington, faculty chair of the Music Business Department at SAE Institute in Nashville. Michael, why don't you explain just how Spotify gets its music? In other words, it gets the music for its service from the distributors, so they're sure to be paid. Explain the process.
Well, they're going to have recordings they want to, like any radio station, you want to broadcast songs that people want to hear, those recordings. And when regular AM and FM, for example, broadcast, they just put it out on the airwaves. They pay the songwriter, usually the publisher, who distributes it to the songwriter. Royalties take place through that and performing rights organizations. It's a simple matter. On AM and FM, it doesn't matter how many people are listening, how long they're listening to a track, and they're just paying, again, the songwriter-publisher. With Spotify, what will have to happen is you'll have to pay the songwriter-publisher, as is the case with AM, FM, but also you have to pay all the performers on a recording and singers and the record label. And what gets more confusing is that you have to pay based on how many people are listening. As more people start to listen, you pay more. And if they don't listen long enough, at some point it's not considered a performance. In different Apple Music, I think, counts what's a performance differently. I think I've read it's 20 seconds. And Spotify, I've read, it's 31 seconds. But there are many more parties involved. There's not just the songwriter-publisher. There's that group, but there's also all the musicians, and it's how many listeners are tuning in for how long.
Robert, they say in one lawsuit, it alleges that it could be $150 million in damages. Another lawsuit alleges $200 million in damages. Where are they getting those numbers from?
So I think they're getting those numbers because the Copyright Act allows for so-called statutory damages and minimum amounts for statutory damages for songs that have been registered with the Copyright Office. And those would be instead of any actual damages that might be paid. So suppose that your song was streamed one time, and the actual damages at the going rate for that might be far less than a dollar or even a penny. But if the Copyright Act says the minimum statutory damages for an infringement are more like $300, then you multiply that, and you're getting a very large number.
And as far as a company called Audium, Michael, it scours streaming services to collect royalties for songwriters like Bob Dylan and Metallica. And it says Spotify's payment problems go beyond obscure songwriters, as we were discussing before. And the company owners shared information that showed even Bob Dylan doesn't get royalties for all the plays of some of his best-known compositions. So something's falling through the cracks.
Well, that could be. I mean, I'm not privy to some of the details. Most of us are not. That's, I guess, a different issue. What's more common is that you cannot identify who the exact people are to pay. And the idea of putting money aside is something that takes place in Europe frequently with black box monies when they can't find holders. When Google was about to buy YouTube, they put aside money because they knew there'd be issues there as well. I think that shows good faith, and it's not surprising these days because there's not a simple means of scanning to find, okay, like for example, I have a Social Security number and I have a VIN number in my car. Now, recordings don't have anything like that. You can't specify, oh, this means exactly this, and this is exactly who we pay. There's not a system that makes sense of all this. So there will be things falling through the cracks. In the case of Dylan, if he's underpaid, that could be, that's just something I wouldn't, most people would know exactly how that works, so I can't say much about that.
Robert, let's talk about the class action nature of this. First of all, you have two songwriters who are vying for, to represent the class. Explain what that's about.
Well, so I think both of them have either felt motivated or seen an opportunity to represent a class. And I think this does seem like the kind of lawsuit that would be good for a class action or that could qualify for a class action. It involves many, many songwriters, and so it satisfies the criterion that a class have enough members that it would be impossible, basically, to include all of them as individual plaintiffs. And it also seems like they have common issues of law and fact among them. Their claims are basically about the same thing, that they're not getting paid by a particular service. The question of whether the named plaintiff will fairly and adequately represent the interests of those class members, that's another issue. My guess is that both Mr. Lowry and Ms. Farrick have adequate legal representation, and they would. So I don't know, you know, which one of those will go forward or whether they will negotiate to consolidate them. Certainly in other cases, class actions have ended up getting consolidated, and the separate lawsuits end up being brought together. And I would not be surprised if that's what happened here as well.
Because, Michael, in a case like this, this seems to be the typical case where if there isn't a class action, there probably won't be very many lawsuits going forward because of the cost of litigating against Spotify.
I agree. And it's a complicated situation, again, because it's digital and the count and how you ascertain that. And also, it would be very difficult for the smaller publisher and smaller record labels, you know, to get involved in such a lawsuit on their own. I think that would be a big problem.
Have there been similar claims, Robert, against Apple Music or any other streaming services, or are those yet to come, or is Apple complying?
Well, that is a good question. This claim is being made in particular about on-demand streaming, and I don't think that there's been a claim made against Apple Music. That's the on-demand streaming service of Apple. I think that these are the first class action suits to be brought against an on-demand streaming service for non-payment of mechanical royalties, which is what this suit is about.
Now, as far as going forward, it seems as if copyright law is not keeping up with tech Would you agree with that, Michael, that it's just not keeping up with tech? It's too difficult to keep up with the way tech is going.
I think that's true. Just the nature of the fact that you listen to digital radio, and one of them, you can create a station that says, "Oh, I want Eminem, and I want, you know, just a certain contemporary artist." You'll get some music, their music, and some like it. You can't specify, but if you can specify, that's on demand and interactive, it's called. And the fact that that involves a different license and gets much more complicated, I think people haven't even, you know, very few people have worked this out as to what it really means and why should there be such disparity. And again, I go back to AM/FM, which doesn't even do anything of accurate tracking. So yeah, copyright and tech don't match up well. There's often a problem.
Well, thank you both for helping to explain these lawsuits. Professor Robert Brown Eyes of George Washington University Law School and Dr. Michael Harrington of SAE Institute in Nashville. That's it for this edition of Bloomberg Law. We'll be back tomorrow and hope you will as well. Bloomberg Best is next for our listeners in New York, Boston, and San Francisco. With all due respect, is next for our D.C. audience right here on Bloomberg Radio.